Hi everyone. Sorry, my busy weeks were followed by some sick weeks, and I'm afraid my voice just isn't up to recording a full episode quite yet. So this one is a re-release of an early episode I made for Unreal. It's one that I'm really quite proud of, so if you're a new listener, I think you'll enjoy it. And I'll hopefully be back with a final wintry episode for this season soon. So thanks for bearing with, and Canary on Boherlat.
Welcome to Unreal, a podcast about Irish history, stories, and tradition. Our landscape was sculpted by giants. According to folklore and myth, their immense size and shape have left lasting marks on the land around us. In anger, giants dig great clumps of earth to throw, making our hills and valleys. In fear, they toss rocks behind them, which become islands. And a surprising number of lakes and rivers have their origins in certain giant-sized bodily functions as well. Wherever you see a strange-shaped rock, or a deep, dark valley that you think couldn't have got there naturally, you can be sure that giants had a hand in its creation. Giants are strong and fierce, and they can be terrifying if you aren't prepared. But, so the stories go, even the smallest person can defeat the strongest giant if you're only clever enough to trick them. I'm Ruth Atkins, and this is Unreal. The Giant's Causeway in Antrim is an area of 40,000 basalt columns left from an ancient volcanic eruption. It has, as its name would suggest, long been associated with giants. Its Irish name is Clochan na Fomorraig, or the Rocks of the Fomorians. The Fomorians were a legendary race of monstrous warriors, sometimes translated as the undersea giants. It was believed that they would attack from the sea and plunder coastal settlements. The Fomorians were popular in Scottish legend as well, and in fact, the Scottish Gaelic word for giant is Fuvara, recalling the Fomorians to this day. Certain Christian manuscripts gave the Fomorians a biblical origin. They were said to be descended from Noah's son Ham, and were some of the first people to ever invade Ireland. The early Irish were no strangers to attacks from the sea. From the 9th until the 11th century, Irish settlements went through countless attacks from Viking raiders, who came oversea from Scandinavia, hoping to take land and treasure for themselves. So it's not surprising that these attacks would seep into legends of brave warriors and fearsome opponents. I think it's likely that these Viking raiders would have seemed giant-like in their attacks at times because of the size and strength of their forces. One of the Viking leaders, Turgesius, was recorded as having a fleet of 120 ships, and he dominated Dublin, Clonmacnoise, and other parts of Ireland for over 20 years. There is an interesting legend about how Turgesius eventually met his demise. Muil Seachlin, an Irish chieftain under Turgesius's rule, offered the Viking leader his daughter's hand in marriage. he sent his daughter with 12 maidens attending her to Tergesius's room. After eyeing each of the women up, none pleased Tergesius except for the daughter, and he laid his hand on her to bring her to his bed. The moment he did so, the 12 maidens threw off their disguises and revealed themselves to be not women, but young beardless warriors with weapons concealed under their skirts. Instantly, they seized Tergesius and slaughtered his men, then brought him, captive, to Muil Seachtain's stronghold. Talk about a red wedding! This theme of male heroes disguising themselves in a feminine or childlike manner to outsmart their fearsome opponent has continued in legends to this day, and the story certainly has parallels with the most famous tale of how the Giant's Causeway came to exist. The tale of Fionn Mac Cumhail and the Giant's Causeway is quite a recent addition to our folklore, at least in the form that we know it today. But it has elements that are more timeless, stretching back through the centuries. Fionn Mac Cumhail, of course, is one of Ireland's most beloved ancient heroes, and he controlled a band of warriors called the Fianna, leading them into escapades that are still recorded in myth, legend, and manuscript today. While in most legends, Fionn and his people are men, of normal size though incredible strength, the stories and folklore told outside of what is known as the Fianaíocht can vary wildly from this. A Scottish poem from the 16th century described a descendant of Fionn Mac Cumhail as having a mouth 11 miles wide. His teeth were 10 miles square. He would upon his harness stand and pluck the stars down with his hand, and set them in a gold garland above his wife's hair. Fionn himself is described as being so large and so mighty that he could change the weather in a fit of temper. The skies rained when he would howl. He troubled all the air. It's from a funny and ultimately very rude poem. There's a link to the full text in my translation on unrealpodcast.com, but be warned, it's not for the faint of heart. More importantly, though, the poem demonstrates that from a pretty early stage, storytellers described Fionn and his kinsmen not merely as men, or even as mighty warriors, but as giants. And where you have a good giant as your hero, a bad giant is never far from the horizon. Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the blood of an English man. Be he alive or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread. So sings the giant of the Jack stories. Jack the Giant Killer had become a common feature of Cornish and English folklore at around the time that the tale of Fionn and the Giant first started to be heard. Unlike Fionn Mac Cumhail, Jack is not a noble, fearless warrior. He is quite the opposite, a lazy, careless young man who often gets himself into trouble by, say, selling their family's only cow for a sack of beans. But because Jack is clever and good at playing tricks on people, he soon finds he has quite the talent for outsmarting and killing giants. In the stories of Jack, our so-called hero makes trips to giant countries where he hides in their houses, steals their possessions, and eventually kills them through his trickery. The giants are rarely the ones who make the first attack, but they are seen as inherently evil in the stories, because they are uncivilized and savage. This is something of a contrast with the Irish tales, where the giants tend to be the ones coming from oversea to attack, and the heroes are the ones defending their own homes. There's a metaphor in there somewhere, I think. There are a few Irish versions of Jack, however. In an Irish story from the 1830s, a man called Stingy Jack is visited by the devil, and through clever trickery, he persuades the devil not to take his soul to hell. As he is also too sinful to be permitted through heaven's gates, Jack's soul is condemned to float about the earth, and it finds its way into carved turnips on All Hallows' Eve, the first jack-o'-lanterns, which later became popular in pumpkin form when the tale made its way to America. The tale of Fionn, the Scottish giant, and the Giant's Causeway has its origins in two separate stories, both of which came about at a time when people were hungry for more stories about Jack-like figures and about giants. The tales both appeared in print in the mid-19th century, although they had likely been making the rounds in oral tradition for some time before that. A short tale appeared in the Dublin Penny Journal in 1832, describing how Fionn MacCool built a land bridge from Antrim to Scotland and challenged the Scottish giant Benan Donner to come over and fight him. The Scottish giant fought Fionn, and he lost, and following this, he made Ireland his new home, marrying an Irish girl and pledging obedience to Cormac, who was king at the time. The story doesn't explain how the causeway came to be destroyed, however, and it's missing what has become the most famous part, that is, how, through the cleverness and quick thinking of his wife, Fionn managed to frighten away the giant, without having to fight him at all. In 1841, a man called William Carleton published a short story based on folklore he had heard around Knockmany in County Tyrone. Almost 50 years later, W.B. Yeats took the liberty of including this story in his collection, Fairy and Folk Tales of the Irish Peasantry. It's probably this collection which has given the story its current level of fame. While Carleton's version of Fionn and the Giant gives Fionn's wife her name, Una, and probably has the most complete account of the ways Una outsmarted the enemy giant, it has a very different account of who that enemy was. For in Carleton's version, Fionn does not fight a Scottish giant. He fights another fearsome warrior of Irish mythology, Cuchulainn. Now, those of you wincing at the inaccuracy of Fionn fighting Cuchulainn, I'm right there with you. The two warriors are from completely different cycles of Irish mythology, and would never have met, nor do they meet in any other legend. It's sort of mystifying that Yeats decided to include it in his collection without any explanation of this. But I guess it's not hard to understand why people wanted a story of Ireland's two greatest heroes facing off. We can perhaps think of it as the Batman versus Superman of its day. Fionn and the Scottish Giant, as it's told today, is a combination of the two 19th century tales I have just outlined. It begins like this. Ireland's hero, Fionn MacCool, heard that a Scottish giant was making a claim on Ireland. Fionn was angry about this, and he built a causeway connecting Ireland and Scotland, and travelled over to challenge the Scottish giant to a fight. When he arrived in Scotland, however, he saw how big and strong the Scottish giant was, and Fionn beat a hasty retreat. But the Scottish giant followed Fionn MacCool back over the causeway, and soon Fionn got to hear that the Scottish giant was looking for him. He confessed to his wife Una how scared he was. "Do not fear," said Una. "Depend on me, and I will figure out a way to help you." Fionn agreed. First, Una took 9 woolen threads of different colours from her basket which she always did when faced with an important task. She plaited them into three plaits, with three colours in each, putting one on her right arm, one round her heart, and the third round her right ankle, for then she knew that nothing she planned would fail. There's a lot to like about this story's beginning. Fionn realising he wasn't as invincible as he had believed himself, and then showing that vulnerability to his wife, who soothes him, and more importantly, comes up with a way to get him out of his predicament. It's unsurprising that Fionn's wife is the brains of this story, for tales of women defeating giants through cleverness were also widespread in folklore. In the Scottish tale, Muila Clubin, a young girl called Muila Clubin is kicked out of her home, along with her two older sisters. When night fell that first evening, the three girls found a house and asked to take shelter, but when inside, they soon realised that the house belonged to a fearsome giant. The giant also had three daughters, and before he put them all to bed, he tied chains of gold around his own daughters' necks and chains of straw around Muila Clubin and her sisters. Later in the night, the giant told his servant that he was thirsty. "Kill one of the strange girls and bring me her blood," he said. "How will I tell them apart from your daughters?" the servant asked, and the giant explained about the chains of gold and straw. But Muila Clubin was still awake, and as soon as she heard this, she rushed to switch around the chains. The servant came, and he was fooled by the swap into killing one of the daughters of the giant. He took the blood to him, and the giant drank it all up. When the giant asked for more, the servant killed the next daughter, and when the giant asked for more again, he killed the last daughter. Meanwhile, Muila Clubin woke her sisters, and they fled from the house, though not before stealing the golden cloth they had been sleeping under. When he discovered what had happened, the furious giant chased them and chased them until he reached a river that he could not cross. "You are over there, Muila Clubin," he called. "I am, though it is hard for thee. You killed my three bald brown daughters. I kill them, though it is hard for thee. And when will you come again?" "I will come when my business brings me," Muila Clubin said. In the tale, Muila Clubin returns multiple times to steal further treasures from the giant, until finally, the giant calls out to her from across the river. "If you were over here in my place, and I was over across the river in yours, how would you follow me?" "I would drink the river dry," said Muila Clubin, and the giant crouched down and began to drink up the river. He drank, and he drank, and he drank, until, at last, he burst. So it just goes to show that even the youngest, smallest little girl can overcome the fiercest giant if they are clever enough to outsmart them. With similar quick thinking to Muila Clubin, Fionn's wife, Una, set to work on her plan to trick the Scottish giant. She took out her bread dough and borrowed some iron pans from her neighbours. She kneaded the iron pans into the middle of the bread, and then she made some more cakes of bread without anything inside. She took some milk curds, which is the solid part of milk when it curdles, and she shaped these into a little ball and handed it to Fionn. Then, with the giant almost across the valley, Una made up a cradle in the corner of the room and told Fionn to get into it quickly, with the baby clothes covering him up. "Lie there and say nothing," said Una. At last, the Scottish giant arrived. "I'm looking for Fionn MacCool," he said. "Well, you'll have to wait a little longer," Una said. "My husband is out seeking a Scottish giant to fight him." "I am that giant," the Scottish giant said. And at that, Una threw back her head and laughed. You are, she said. Tell me, have you ever seen my husband Fionn? If you take my advice, you poor creature, you'll pray day and night never to see him. But you're safe for the time being. As I said, it's only myself and the poor sick baby in the house, for Fionn left in an awful hurry. The Scottish giant spotted the baby in the cradle, and he gave a start. He had never seen a child so big. If Fionn's youngest baby is that size, he said to himself, what on earth is the size of Fionn himself? Disguising something by dressing it as a baby and putting it in a cradle is a common trope in folklore. Usually, though, it's a stolen sheep that gets disguised. And there are many stories around the world of how ordinary people fooled giants into thinking that something much bigger and scarier was on its way. Sometimes a person would convince the giant that the thunder outside was the rattling of their brother's wagon, or tell them that the large millstones in their yard were actually pearls from their mother's necklace. Sometimes they would build an enormous pair of shoes and leave them outside the house so that the giant would think someone enormous lived nearby and avoid it. Sit down, said Una, betraying nothing in her eyes. I'm sure you must be starving, a poor scrawny little thing like you. Here's some bread I've baked fresh today. And she went and took out the bread cakes, which had the iron pans inside them, and she passed a few over to the giant. Hungrily, the giant bit straight into one of the cakes of bread, and he immediately let out a roar of pain. Blood and fury, he shouted. Two of my teeth, out on the table. What kind of bread is this you're giving me? Why, only the bread my husband and son eat, Una said in a surprised tone. Well, I do make it a little hard as the baby is teething, the poor sick little thing. And she went over and handed Fionn a cake of bread that had no iron in it. And Fionn very quickly gobbled the whole thing up. The giant was thunderstruck. How could I have a chance with a man as strong as Fionn MacCool, he said to himself, when even his little sick son eats bread so hard it knocks my teeth out. Now, Fionn sat up in the cradle and spoke to the giant himself. Call yourself strong, he asked, and the giant marvelled at such lungs on a child. Can you squeeze water out of that white stone there? The Scottish giant took up the stone. He squeezed and squeezed, but no water came out. Ah, you're a poor creature, said Fionn. You, a giant, give me the stone here. And Fionn took the stone, but he secretly swapped it with the ball of milk curds that Una had given him. As he squeezed the ball, the whey liquid quickly came pouring out. The giant's knees knocked together with terror at the thought of Fionn returning. Actually, he said, I don't think I can stay to wait for Fionn. Things to do, you know. He quickly bid Una farewell and ran from the house as fast as he could back to Scotland. When he was halfway across the Irish Sea, the Scottish giant suddenly became afraid that Fionn would follow him, and he ripped up the stones from the road Fionn had built. He threw them back behind him, leaving a pile on Antrim's shore, which is now known as the Giant's Causeway. There are quite a few variations to this tale, and it wasn't until very recent times that the Giant's Causeway became an established part of the story. In the many different versions, the escapade between Fionn and the giant has led to the creation of dozens of hills, lakes and islands in Ireland and further afield, including Shantoum Mountain, Cutra Lake, Loch Ney and the Isle of Man. In a version of the story originating from the Isle of Man, Fionn goes to live on the island, where he incurs the wrath of the Buggane, a giant ogre-like creature from Manx folklore. While Mrs. McCool's trick works in the short term, the Buggane does eventually come out victorious, and Fionn has to run back to Ireland. The Buggane throws a tooth after him, which becomes known thereafter as Chicken's Rock. In William Carleton's version, where Fionn is fighting Cú Chulainn, Cú Chulainn puts his hand into Fionn's mouth to feel what kind of teeth could be so strong to chomp through bread as hard as that. Fionn bites down and rips the giant's finger off. As all of the giant's strength was located in that finger, he is now helpless, and Fionn actually kills him in that story. Because there are so many variations to the tale, it makes it a really difficult story to track back to its beginnings. However, all of these differences and inconsistencies suggest that it is still a living folk tale, being told organically and still permeating our memory in ever-changing forms. It's so exciting to see that Irish folk tales are still being built on and retold today, suggesting that the tradition will remain alive and well for generations to come. Perhaps you've heard a version told in your area. I'd love to hear it, so do get in touch. Thanks for listening to this episode of Unreal. And thank you so much to the people who said such nice things about the first episode on the Children of Lir. It was lovely to hear you enjoyed it. If you haven't heard that episode yet, you can find it on unrealpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I believe it should even be on Spotify now. If you are enjoying the show and would like to show your support, it would be great if you could leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. And make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can also get in touch with me on the website, unrealpodcast.com, or on Twitter at UnrealPod. And let me know if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes. I would love to hear from you. Unreal is written and created by me, Ruth Atkins. You can find episode scripts and links to further reading on unrealpodcast.com. Music in this episode is by Slaunta from the freemusicarchive.org. The theme song is The Butterfly, and the song you are listening to now is The Lark in the Morning and the Athol Highlanders. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another piece of Irish history. Until then, gnáire an bóthar leat.